Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, I was just thinking about how much I hate Lord Byron.
Yeah, man.
I know, you're like, because he like did a bunch of shitty things.
And I've always known that.
I've always hated Lord Byron.
I've never said that I liked Lord Byron.
You know, guys, that's a really weird coincidence because I just got here and I was, you know, the whole time I was just thinking about, man, I hate Lord Byron.
I hate Lord Byron so much.
Fuck you, Lord Byron.
And this. What were talking about on the train? Like, what? What's the point of even talking about that guy?
Yeah,
fucking Lord Byron.
Fuck him. We hate Lord Byron, and this is Unfeatured Articles. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our very scripted apology.
Yeah.
So a couple of episodes ago, we found out, like, we were looking into, I think it was a vampire, like, the vampire, and, like, where kind of, like, the vampire came from. And it was, like, it was originally, like, the very sexy kind of flamboyant vampire kind of image was based off a lot of Lord Byron.
Yes.
And we looked into Lord Byron, and we were like, fuck, Byron's a bit of a mad dog.
He's done a lot of cool stuff, but then we found out.
And we were like, okay, but there was a part of us that was like ringing a bell of like Lord Byron being problematic. And
surely.
Then we were like, if there's any part, let us know. And boy howdy did people let us know.
So,
Lord Byron did some cool things and did some real fucking not cool things. And let's just put that man in the bin for a while.
Put him in the bin for a while.
Put him in the bin.
In the sin bin.
In the sin bin, because fuck me.
Yeah.
We're putting him in timeout to think about what he's done.
Lord Byron is going in timeout. Yeah. And he will not go into the bracket because I do believe we gave the episode to Lord Byron.
I think we should probably just give the win to Drew's article for that episode.
That was what we were talking about.
Yeah,
that's
Zuda,
fair.
The Zudahak.
That's fair.
The wise man that if he was evil transformed into a vampire.
Yes, something like that.
Yeah.
He was a cloud boy.
A cloud boy, yeah, he liked clouds. Anyway, we are joined once again, ladies and gentlemen, by Grace Shadell.
Hi.
And as ever, we are joined by James Keogh.
That's me.
Lachlan Hoy.
Yes.
And myself, Curtis Lang.
Yes.
Drew Buchanan was in the room but had to go home because of the amount of...
That boy had a lot of fun.
Had a lot of fun over the weekend.
Over the weekend,
splendor
of the grass. And a lot of other things.
He fell asleep on the couch. And then I went over to wake him up to say, okay, we'll tag out. You come do an episode. And he looked at me with eyes that were just empty of any kind of joy, love, happiness at all. And he just looked at me and just went, I need to sleep. And I was like, here's my go-kart. Get
go.
On the train.
Go.
Go home, boy.
Be free.
Yeah, definitely the kind of fun weekend that takes a serious toll on
yes.
the body.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I just pray that he wakes up before he gets to his station.
I pray that he wakes up full stop.
Yeah, that's true.
Jesus. At this point, that's pretty fair.
Oof. Let's save some orphans.
Let's do it.
We're going to go to the orphanage. Yeah. These are orphaned pages that aren't referenced by any other page on the site. And we're going to save one of them. Last week, we saved the concept of the phrase, was up. That was very fun.
Good.
This week, we're going to save some more articles. Grace, give me a number.
2021.
If my laptop would like to load. 2021. While that's loading, Lachlan, what's your number going to be?
Bloody 23. 23?
The number
23.
23.
A 2 and a 3.
All right. That one's going to load up.
Today.
And then Curtis? What is your number going to be?
1995.
Ooh, what a year. The year of your birth.
Yep.
Oh, is that not public
information? Did you have to think about that?
No, I was just like, do I want to share that?
Yeah, sorry.
I don't give a fuck.
The year of a lot of things.
Including my birth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dodie Clark. I found out we're the same age. She's like 4 months older than me. And I'm like, I've got 4 months to get my fucking shit together.
<It's> my act. She's the YouTuber, yeah, Dodie?
Yeah, and the singer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. cool. All right, so.
Would he be so kind as to fall in love with me? I like
her music's very good.
Her music, it's delightful. She's delightful. Dodie, if you're listening.
Dodie, come on the show.
Come on the show. On. Hit me up. I really think we'd be good friends.
Grace, you've selected the last, the surname, Petterd.
Petterd.
Petterd is a surname. Notable people with the surname include Ricky Petterd, a former professional Australian rules football player, and William Frederick Petterd, a Tasmanian scientist and boot importer.
What does he represent?
He imported some boots.
He's a boot boy.
He's a boot boy!
Sorry, I'm just texting Drew to say, let me know when you're home.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Lachlan, you have selected Artemonova Permcry. Artemonova is a rural locality in Permkrai in Russia with a population of 181 as of 2010. Oh. There are five streets.
Oh, fun.
They had, in the whole region, the whole locality, they have five streets.
I mean, you wouldn't get lost.
You would not get lost.
Are they big streets?
Well, see, I'm looking at it. There is a lake like in the middle of this locality, but there's only five streets. I don't know. It's very intricate.
I guess it's just streets around the lake.
I guess so.
Maybe to get places, you just row across the lake.
Maybe. Or maybe there's a lot of like canals. Ways. Yeah. It's like Venice.
Like Venice, but in rural Russia.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you understand how they get the two mixed up, okay?
And that's our fair. Third orphan, Paul Eck Ranch. Oh. Did we decide? Was this the orphanage music?
Wasn't what I thought it was.
Yeah, so that's all right. It was epic.
Commit to the bit.
Paul Eck Ranch is an American... Just 20%. A lot less. Less. 20% less. Oh,
that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Paul Eck Ranch is an American plant grower located in Encinitas, California, with production facilities in Guatemala. This egg has grown to become the world's largest poinsettia producer, which is the Christmas star, with 50% of the market share.
Oh, whoa.
50% of Christmas stars are grown at Paul Eck Ranch. German emigrant Albert Eck began cultivating poinsettias in Eagle Rock, Los Angeles, in 1909.
Oh, my God.
I hate everybody.
Paul Eck Jr. took over the family business in 1963 and expanded it heavily. And then Paul Eck III took over the ranch in 1992. And that's the Paul Eck Ranch.
I can't believe I probably had one of these man's plants in my house.
Right?
Right.
You have a 50-50 chance. So, what are we going to choose? Are we going to choose the last name Petterd? Are we going to choose the we're going to choose Artemonova in Permkrai? Or are we going to choose the Paul Eck Ranch? Does anyone have any favorites?
I mean, my leading contender would probably be the ranch.
You like the ranch? Yeah.
I got to go the ranch.
All right, let's go. Paul Eck Ranch, you're in it.
Hell yeah.
Huzzah.
Huzzoo. Who wants to go first now in the show? Can I do it?
Yes.
Go. I wasn't doing it last time.
No, you do it, man.
So now it's time for me to do it. All right. I have a game.
Oh.
Yes. As I am known to do, I have a game. Ooh, this isn't the tone. This isn't the tone I'm going for.
Do we have show music?
Do we have some like game show, some peppy, some stuff?
What's something that'll make me think of Grant Danya?
Ooh, yeah, give me that. Okay, all right.
I'm playing.
It's sort of... Okay, all right, I'll work with it.
Oh.
Are we doing two at the same time?
Three, baby.
This is audio poison.
This is. I'm just gonna do it. Good. Bloody.
It's cool.
Yeah.
I'll let you know when I've got some.
All right, sounds good. So, I went onto Little Cycle Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
I got the list.
Wikipedia?
Of, yeah,
what's that?
It's a niche little. You know, you've heard of the encyclopedia?
No.
Okay. List of Oreo varieties. Yes. List of Oreo varieties. There are a lot of them, and what we're gonna do is sort them into the novelty versus Oreo quality index.
Yeah.
Oh.
So well. I have a big index, a big, you know, grid. On the y-axis, you've got your top one, your high novelty items, and then at the bottom there, your low novelty items. And then on the left, you got your bad Oreos, Oreos you don't want to taste.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, on the other side, your good tasting Oreos, the Oreos you want to try, you want to get, you're inquisitive. about what these Oreos are.
Okay.
For example, I'm going to like throw out just like a dummy one. Chocolate Oreo, right?
Okay.
We're talking pretty low novelty. Mm. It's just a chocolate, you know, you just got chocolate cream. But a good Oreo, right? I want to taste the chocolate Oreo.
It's a pretty good Oreo.
It's a pretty good Oreo, right? So that would be in that kind of bottom right corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we know the game.
Low novelty, high quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll start you off easy. Watermelon Oreo.
This is a call out really quickly. I gave Drew my last $20 so he could put it on his go-kart so he could get home. And he was like, I'll transfer your big dog. And what he didn't tell me is that his bank and my bank, they don't have that fast transfer
thing.
Oh,
no. You got to wait that 24 hours.
So now I'm out that $20 and now I can't get dinner.
Oh, no.
No.
The things I give up for Drewby Cat.
Yeah.
Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Pursuit of happiness.
$20.
$20 as well.
$20.
All right.
Anyway, so subscribe to our Patreon.
Watermelon Oreo. Where is that sitting?
I think I'm going to put it as a high novelty.
I think it's got that novelty. I think it's got a novelty about it.
I feel like the novelty is going to get higher, though. I feel like this isn't the highest novelty.
Maybe, all right, let's put
it's not high, but it's above.
Not the tone.
Line.
Not the tone. I'm sorry, dude. Just not the tone we're looking for, man.
It's not high novelty, no. But it's above the mid.
I'm going to say a little bit above mid. How are we going? Bad Oreo versus good Oreo?
Oh, like bad Oreo, right?
I was thinking bad Oreo.
Like
this
bad
is a
Oreo.
Fruit Oreo.
Yeah.
Do you reckon it tastes like watermelon bubblegum in the middle?
Maybe. If it does.
But with a chocolate biscuit.
That's
think.
Fair.
Yeah,
the
you're
shell
right,
is still
right.
A chocolate biscuit.
Okay.
I'd put that down the bad Oreo side.
I agree.
Let me throw this one at you.
Okay.
Wasabi Oreo.
Oh, now this one's a curveball.
This one's a curveball.
I see.
I'm thinking high novelty.
Well, it depends.
Where are we?
Yeah. Because if we're talking, this is released in Japan, then this is not a novelty item.
Contextless. Devoid of context, right?
Devoid of context.
This is just, you're just being presented these Oreos.
So know, the only context not, being not, our knowledge of the Oreo company?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but it's not like even in Japan, it's not like wasabi is like...
Right.
It's not
they
like,
don't have wasabi on everything.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they
but
got
I,
those wasabi Kit Kats though.
Like,
they go
if we
crazy
had like,
with
that's,
them,
like
they
tomato
crazy.
Sauce, like we have tomato sauce on fucking everything. That's a novelty chip.
If there
still,
was,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but I think as far as I'm aware, and I may be wrong on this, I believe that wasabi as like a confectionery flavoring in Japan is as common as like green tea.
Green tea is a big one.
So I just don't know how that it would be a novelty.
Let's say,
that.
Okay.
But I would say in my life, that would be
this,
a very novelty. Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Curtis, concept, tomato sauce flavored Oreos?
Where do you rank that?
That's bad.
Bad Oreo?
That's real bad.
Is that
bad
low Oreo? Quality? How novelty is that?
Hey,
how,
guys, I just need to check something. Yeah, cool.
That is still, still ongoing. Okay. Moving on. We get wilder from here. It only gets wilder from
oh,
here.
Oh, good.
Thank goodness.
Tell me, where are you placing Mickey Mouse Oreo?
Wait.
What flavor is Mickey Mouse Oreo?
Mickey Mouse Oreo is all I'm going to give you.
High novelty.
Yep.
Low quality.
But we don't know the
I
flavor.
I have a personal vendetta against the mouse.
That's true. You do hate the mouse.
That's a good segue.
Well, it depends. Is it artificially flavored?
It is.
No, it tastes like real Mickey Mouse.
I will give you.
Like
okay.
I'm just saying, is there real Mickey Mouse? Is like
there real Mickey Mouse in this?
5% Mickey Mouse in every bite.
Yeah.
They milked him like a snake.
Oh, you milk his two front mouse teeth.
No, remember how I was talking about milking in the last episode?
Oh, no.
No, not that milking.
No, they were milking Mickey, our boy Mickey.
How does Mickey Mouse taste?
Tickle the scrot, you get him out.
How does Mickey Mouse taste? Is it good or bad?
I'd say Mickey Mouse probably tastes pretty good. I feel like Disney wouldn't allow Mickey Mouse Oreos to taste bad.
You're right. Okay, I want to taste
Mickey Mouse is too precious.
You want to taste...
I desire them.
I desire to taste Mickey Mouse.
What a graphic episode we've ever had.
If it's a desire thing, if it's like, I don't want to try these or I do want to try these.
You want to fuck Mickey Mouse. That's what
I
I'm getting from.
I want to eat
you
him.
Can, just you, say you want to suck desire Mickey Mouse.
Cock.
No, bring me the Oreos. I would like to taste the mouse.
Give me the mouse. Hot chicken wing Oreo.
Ooh.
That sounds right up my alley.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was
James,
gonna say.
I found your music.
Please. What is this?
Adventurous music for adventurous
Yeah,
Oreos.
This is good. 20%. There we go.
He always wants it quieter.
Just that little bit.
I want less Mickey Mouse cock talk.
You want to hear
You brought
tone.
The cock into this.
Yeah, I did not.
You actively did.
He kept saying he wanted to taste Mickey Mouse.
Yes, I want to eat Mickey Mouse. What is dick. So hard to understand? Hot chicken wing Oreo. How is this? Is this a good Oreo?
I think that's like mid-novelty, right?
Yeah.
This is like mid-novelty. It's not like...
It's not like Mickey Mouse.
It's not Mickey Mouse.
I'm going to say mid-novelty, mid-quality. I don't think it's going to be great.
Oh, yeah.
You'll definitely it's just have average. A go of it.
Just kind average. Of... Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'd probably like it over like wasabi.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me too. How to Train Your Dragon Oreo.
What was the flavor? What was the flavor?
How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon is the flavor.
What does that movie taste like?
Rank it blind, and then I'll tell you what the flavor
it's
is.
It's like, okay, Curtis.
You still haven't told me what Mickey Mouse tastes
oh,
like.
Oh, that, so, that ended up being birthday cake.
Curtis.
I'm into that.
That's basically, the How to Train Your Dragon Oreos.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine...
Oh, sorry.
If you were to take a bite of this Oreo, you'd be like, huh... That tastes like How to Train Your
that
Dragon.
That tastes exactly like How to Train Your Dragon.
When you
this
take-
tastes like How to Train Your Dragon.
And I don't know what that means
one,
for you.
Yeah.
So, 1, 2, 3. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The grunts.
Curtis, when you take a bite, it gives you a flashback Ratatouille style to the entire movie.
The entire
How to Train
movie.
Your Dragon.
Yeah. It's like how Keanu Reeves learns Kung Fu in The Matrix. Yeah. Where
exactly.
he like, gets it implanted.
Yeah.
Just like,
you eat an Oreo and you have seen the movie. How to Train Your Dragon.
Like a Slumdog Millionaire flashback.
Yes, yeah.
I do like the movie Ratatouille. I like the two main characters, Ratto and Mr. Tui.
And Mr. Tui.
Anyway, I reckon that tastes amazing. Because How to Train Your Dragon was a
good
film.
Movie.
And anything that tastes like that movie would be good.
I don't trust the mouse, but I trust DreamWorks.
I
That's
trust Toothless.
DreamWorks is owned by the mouse.
Well, look.
Is that so?
Yes.
Oh, it is now, isn't it? With the whole
Curtis,
they have an independent brand
they
identity.
Do.
There's been, like everyone has been like DreamWorks and Disney are this company. They have always
Disney
been under the same
banner. Wow.
Disney owns everyone, but Curtis, I have to believe some things to sleep at night.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes we're just gonna, you know, ignorance is bliss. All right, the American cream.
Oh, yuck!
Now that sounds like cum.
That's a bad Oreo. Yeah.
That's a bad Oreo. All right. Bad Oreo, but high novelty? How novel this is?
I don't think it's very novel.
I don't think it's very novel.
For an American company, I don't think so.
No, that's
It'd
true.
Be like a 4th of July
It'd be
4th
of July, I think.
Guys, all this talk of Oreos has made me really need to go to the bathroom. I'm tapping out for a sec.
Okay.
I'm going to the bathroom.
We'll take over
You do your nasty
Oreo
business.
Duty.
Do you want some music? I'll give you music.
Hey, Curtis, are you taking your Switch?
Why even have a Switch?
Is that this episode or last
episode? Last episode.
Yeah, good.
All right.
Don't poo with your Switch. That's the final thing I might ever
Don't
say.
Don't poo on your Switch. I think we could all agree
no,
that.
No, that I'll allow.
Okay. Love Oreo.
Ooh.
What does love taste like? And how novel is love?
You're asking some really important questions, James.
Thank you.
I'm going to say it sits exactly on the halfway point between novel and not novel.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's a novelty, but it gets done every
year. Yeah, exactly. We have Valentine's Day now. Love is sort of commercialized at this point. You've got your Oreos.
I'm going to list it high on quality, though, because I like things that are pink, and it's almost definitely pink, right?
Yeah. Also, I feel like you wouldn't release something year by year if it wasn't good.
That's
true.
So. Yeah. All right, SpongeBob Oreo.
Well, that's actually low novelty. That was the first Oreo. That was the original Oreo flavor.
SpongeBob was the first Oreo. They're all SpongeBob flavored.
They're all SpongeBob.
They just lost the licensing rights. They had to take it off the package.
Every Oreo has a little bit of SpongeBob.
So that's low novelty, high quality,
low
baby.
High quality, that's it.
The weird thing is, no matter what flavor you told me that SpongeBob Oreos tasted like, I feel like it would taste like banana to me.
Right, yeah. You just
tell
have
me
it in your
something
mind.
Something else, but I'd look at that and I'd be like, well, that's a banana Oreo.
Yeah. I've got a couple more. Ice cream rainbow sorbet Oreo.
Sorbet?
Sorbet. Like, ice cream rainbow
sorbet. Is it a Sesame Street thing?
It is not.
Oh.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
It is ice cream rainbow sorbet. Limited edition made up of two golden Oreo cookies with the double stuffed thickness layer of tri-color raspberry and lime sherbet flavor cream filling. Ice cream rainbow, sure, but why did they call it that?
I think somebody at the Oreo company was called Bert, and when he brought this idea to them, they were like,
Sure, Bert. But it is 100% not. I thought the same thing. I was like, this is...
It's got nothing to do with Sesame Street, though?
Nothing to do with Sesame Street.
Wild. I mean, it sounds good as hell.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
That's a good Oreo. And like, but I just don't know how novel... Like, is it just for Bert's?
Well, I suppose it depends. Because it's like, sherbet is like a fairly standard confectionery flavor.
Right, that's the thing.
But if it is...
If it's legally Bert,
only able to be sold to Bert's, then I feel like that's a really interesting direction.
Extremely novel, extremely niche.
Yeah, no one does that.
No one does that these days.
And I feel like from the name, that's probably the case here. So I'd say it's pretty novel.
Here's your final Oreo.
Oh, the last one ever?
I've got a few more if you want more Oreos. But this is the one I wanted to cap off on. Mystery Oreo.
I think I've had this. I think I've had one of these.
Where in can we place the Mystery Oreo?
It's bad. Not on the grid.
Bad. I'm back and it's bad.
As a bad Oreo? It's like a mystery meat situation?
Yeah. It's not on the grid.
I'm having a little chucky at the moment. I don't
know
if you can hear.
It's undefinable by nature.
They can hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like this ASMR.
Yeah, this is...
What's like the opposite of the tingles?
Ooh. Yikes, yikes.
Just a big heavy breath into the microphone.
So
are you guys not a fan of mystery flavor? Because mystery flavor is like my favorite thing.
What is mystery flavor?
I like to know what I'm putting in my body.
Well,
my body is a temple.
Yeah. It was just vaguely sweet.
Oh, have you had mystery Oreos?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have our expert. Because I had mystery Pringles and the whole thing there was like, if you can guess the flavor, you win a prize.
Okay.
So I'm assuming mystery Oreos are something along those lines.
You'd hope so. Because in my mind, I just thought that like they used whatever was left over. Like they just had a box of discarded like bits.
It's all the Oreo leavens.
Yeah. They just sort of put it together.
I don't know if... it's too late. I've started. A certain ice cream company does that with one of their ice creams.
Oh, but you can't, you have too much at stake in this.
Yes.
And you cannot say any more.
Yes. But I'll tell you, it's not as bad as it sounds. Just all the chocolate ice cream that is like, is like kind of like, because they go through like a checking process.
Yeah.
Right? All the chocolate ice cream is like gone like, okay, we can't package that. Like there's an issue with that.
It's dangerously chocolatey.
They put it back in a thing. They mix it all up. And then they make a different ice cream with it.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
That's a big conspiracy. Yep. I love it.
I'm into it. I like
that it's just reusing.
It's just recycling.
The ice cream's still fine. It's just like aesthetically they can't sell it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like package problems? Yeah. Fair enough. Cool.
We're giving lost ice cream another chance.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right.
It's good for the environment.
I know I said I wanted to leave on mystery Oreo, but this is a novelty Oreo that is not a flavor. It is just a thing that they did.
An Oreo experience.
It's an Oreo experience. It's the Oreo Music Box, which is a record player that plays music when you put an Oreo in it.
Oh my God, I heard about this.
And the music changes when you take a bite out of it.
Uh-huh.
So like you put an Oreo in there, it spins around and like, I don't even know how, I think it like uses light or something. And then when you have like take a bite out of the side, it like changes the edge. So it just like plays a different thing.
Yeah. You essentially use your like Oreos as like vinyls in this like tiny record player. You, like, it's cool as hell.
Have you seen it?
I've seen pictures of it. I haven't seen it in action.
Oreo audio.
Aurodio.
No.
That
I'm sorry. I want to be with you.
No,
I
get it. I get it.
Aurodio.
It sounds like a hashtag for something erotic, which is why hashtag I don't Oreo like
audio
it.
Or it is. Hashtag Aurodio.
It is.
This ain't my first Aurodio.
check the show notes for a link to my private Twitter.
All right. And that is our fun game of the novelty versus Oreo quality index. For novelty Oreos. There are a couple more that I didn't list, like football Oreo.
Oh, good.
And good humor strawberry shortcake Oreo and Swedish fish Oreo.
Sway.
Yeah.
That's just a food, though, I think.
That's just a lot of food.
Swedish fish is like a candy.
It's like the gummy.
Yeah.
But like also, why put that in an Oreo?
Fair point.
Yep.
You got me there?
That? Why do that, though?
It's just a Swedish fish between the two biscuits.
Yeah. No cream.
It's
no
loose cream. Crackers and Swedish fish.
It's like those Lunchables you get where you like have the loose crackers and then some dip.
Yeah, but the dip is...
It's loose Oreos and some Swedish fish.
And it's not like melted into a dip or anything. It's just the fish. Who's judging this app?
Would be me.
You are? Okie dokie.
Oh, okay. So who's up? Me or Grace?
Wait, Grace, do you have one?
I have one, but I thought I was judging. So. Oh.
Too many judges.
No, you are our guest. This is my house. It's not. I will judge.
You'll judge?
All right. I will judge.
Good.
Okay, well, that's really great because I get to talk about Disney again.
Hell yeah.
Yay.
So are you going or?
Yeah, let's
go.
A really uncommon thing on
she
this
started
podcast.
The transition. I couldn't stop it if
I tried.
No,
that's fair.
I've taken control. Okay, so last time I talked kind of vaguely about Disney. This time I'm going to talk directly about the man. Obviously, Disney had like a phenomenal impact on pop culture and animation just as a whole. But then
he was a big cuck. He was a big cuck boy.
He was, yeah. He was certainly something.
Uh huh.
In 1941,
they're never going to let me be on Star Wars, are they?
I don't know, man.
They won't let me be on Star Wars.
That's for sure.
This is actually difficult because I'm hoping to get a job in animation. So this could be...
Right. This could be condemning.
This could get me.
Oopsie.
Whoops. Anyway.
How strong are your convictions?
Yeah.
I'd...
Pretty strong.
I'm fine.
It's time.
Let's do it.
Yeah. 1941. An enormous amount of his workers went on strike because he massively underpaid them, took advantage of them, and was incredibly sexist and racist in the workplace.
Ooh.
They took signs outside the studios that involved and included giant guillotines and Mickey Mouse.
Oh.
These were all artists, so their signs were
very
beautiful.
Well made. Yeah.
They were lovely. There's a lot of very gorgeous photos online if you'd like to take inspiration for your next protest.
What would I search to get that?
Just
Disney sort of, protest signs?
Yeah, 1941 maybe. I think there's been a couple of protests.
Of course.
There's been a few.
Basically, he gave them a small raise, promised to be less horrible to the women working for him, and some people went back to work. Others did not. They moved across the river and down a bit, and they formed UPA, which was another studio basically that went against everything Disney stood for.
Oh, wow.
They were all about, you know, paying their workers fairly, and they were all about, like, giving chances to young animators to work on bigger projects.
Yeah.
They were very big in the 50s. They sort of pioneered the, like, classic modern animation.
Oh,
they
really?
Did
what are they called?
UPA.
UPA.
They did the Madeline cartoon. You know?
No oh. way. Yep. That's really cool.
The
Hannah Flannery cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's Madeline
so
all
like,
grown up.
Madeline is like the best example I can give you of their style of animation. It's okay. flat. They had a lot of hand painted backgrounds.
They did Spy versus Spy.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
They did a lot of good stuff. They were like phenomenal. And Disney hated them. He hated them so much. And this is up for debate, even though it's kind of not because there's paperwork to prove it.
Mm.
He was convinced that they were all communists and was an FBI informer and in court ratted some of them out as being communist supporters.
Who? Disney did?
Disney went into court, apparently, and he said that some of the people who organized the strike against him were communists.
Which in the 1950s was kind of like in Germany during the 40s being like, that person is Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Because, well, not so much that they would kill you, but they would pretty much ruin your life.
Yeah, they persecute you.
Yeah.
So he had, whether or not this is proven, because there's not like a lot of his, a lot of the files that came out sort of like through Freedom of Information, a lot of it's redacted and you can't see exactly what he said, but there's enough that you can sort of get the idea that he was like ratting them out.
Mm. Yikes, how free is your information?
Yeah. So later on, he used these FBI connections to buy land as cheaply as possible and keep control over it in perpetuity because his original idea for the Orlando Park was a utopian city of the future that would include both offices and residential areas for people to live at their place of work.
Hannah's talked about this.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Flannery talked about that. Yes. He literally owns
Epcot.
Okay, so you know how big fucking... not Disney World is.
Mm.
It's huge, right? It occupies about 35% of the land that Disney owns in that area.
Oh my God.
What he would do is he went through his FBI informers. He went through like a bunch of stuff. He got like a bunch of, approval to do stuff that pretty shady. He would use like shell companies, and he would use like private buyers to go and purchase this land off people, because he knew that if he approached someone as Disney and said, I want your land, they'd say, well, give me triple what it's worth because you can afford it. And he could.
Right.
So he would send these like shell companies and these other private buyers to go buy this land as cheaply as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And then he'd snap it up and be like, well, I can do whatever I want with this now, and was able to sort of get approvals for stuff that maybe your everyday man could not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Hannah said something like, and it's all like – Marsh and like the bio. So like it was worth pittance.
Yeah.
It was pittance. But like because Disney bought it all and now they are Disney.
Then it's worth.
It's his fortune. Millions.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So he has a long history of sort of using his position of power to, you know, influence sort of to get what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
What a guy.
A white man with power.
Yeah, with money and power, who hates the people who wouldn't let him oppress them, who moved down the street to make art that he did not approve of. One of the main reasons, other than the fact that they just didn't like him, one of the main reasons why Disney hated UPA so much was because Disney went for such like a naturalistic, realistic style. He wanted realism over anything else. And UPA moved down the street and decided to start looking into like graphic styles influenced by German design groups. So he wasn't keen on that either because they were betraying his good old-fashioned American sort of style. And they were like super successful. They were like fairly competitive against him up until like the 70s. And then they were bought by Universal and shut down afterwards.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So Universal had them for a little bit. And,
and now who owns
Universal?
Most of Universal?
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Yes. So you can sort of connect those dots about how UPA, a studio that Disney famously hated, was very successful, suddenly fell into ruin after being bought by Universal.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. That's crazy.
Yes.
That's like high-tech pettiness. That's crazy.
It's James, we did a whole Good Time Boy show about literally this.
That's true. Like, that's actually true. Oh, I forgot about that.
It was a comedy show, but there was like an error. There was a part of me that was going like, hey, seriously, the guys.
Right. But for real.
They own everything.
Yeah.
I paid my $5 to get into that show, and the whole time I was like, somebody gets it. Somebody gets it.
Thank you.
It's no secret too, like what he did. Like all of my notes, this isn't from Wikipedia. This is from my university course in history of animation. And it's just known.
Yeah, this is like blatant public record stuff, right?
This is just like, oh, so you want to work in animation? Well, here's what Disney's like. Also, maybe apply for a job there because they'll pay you really well.
Yikes.
That's all I have to say.
Jeez Louise.
just thought I'd give it.
Is there hope? Is there any sort of hopeful message you can end on, knowing all this information about Disney?
No.
Not really. Disney owns a huge portion of the entertainment industry. So if you're like me and want to get into animation, read your contract really well.
Ooh.
Mm.
That's about it.
That's a good tip.
Yes.
Just a good tip for life.
Read that contract.
Read your contract.
Yeah. If you're confused, get a lawyer.
But not Lachlan, because he'll go to jail.
But yeah, I'll go to prison.
Yeah, it can't be Lachlan.
Can't be me.
Sorry.
Well, in 5 years, it could be you.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, okay. In five years.
What's going to happen in 5 years?
In 5 years, I'll come back to this episode and I'll edit the show notes to give the email address of my office at my law firm. And then you can send your contracts to me.
Hey guys, future Lachlan here. Just wanted to check in and just say you can
future
actually.
Future Lachlan sounds a lot like James.
Yeah, it's crazy. Lachlan, you have an article.
I do. Okay, so apologies to people who went into this last time I did it. And this won't be as long as the last one was, thank God.
This good. Is a two-parter?
Because I was about to say, keep it on the short side.
People. Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. I went in with a big one, just kind of like wet my beak, I guess. Mm. But this one's a bit of a shorter one. So this is another kind of like academic thing. Bearing in mind, if people aren't into this, then like do reach out and let us know. I will do other stuff.
Oh, fuck them. It's our podcast. We can do what we want.
Or that.
I don't.
Or maybe you can learn some cool stuff while also having a fun laugh with your friends.
Ha ha ha.
Hee hee hee.
Hee hee.
Ha ha.
Hoo hoo.
So, 1960s.
Yeah.
We've all heard of it.
I've heard of the 1960s. I the don't concept of it. The 1960s.
Yeah, well, I mean,
there's a lot of conflicting evidence.
Scientific opinion is split. but
that the 1960s happened.
If the 1960s,
I believe they happened. I just believe they were flat.
Ah.
So the 1960s saw a lot of like really, I guess, big social movements emerge. You saw, especially because of you had concerns around the use of nuclear weapons. Mm. You had concerns about sort of all of the wars of leading up to that point of the 20th century. So you see people like protesting nuclear testing, and you see like the founding of Greenpeace, and it's this like big time where the world kind of like took a step forward in environmental advocacy.
Right.
And one of the ideas to emerge sort of in the wake of this development in the 1960s is the theory of deep ecology.
Okay.
So this is going to get a little bit in the weeds.
Oh!
Because it's about plants and shit.
Hell yeah. Strong dude. Really strong.
So Nace it's the encyclopedia. So Nice.
Ah.
Arne Nice wrote a paper in 1972/1973 that basically coined the term deep ecology. So deep ecology is basically ecologists and scientists and like philosophers kind of responding to a very like liberal kind of capitalist world that we live in.
Right.
It's been an idea for all of liberal thinking that nature is something that human beings are separate from and exists for us to dominate and use for our own purposes. It's this human instrumental view, basically, nature is just an instrument for us to use for our own kind of ends. And so sort of as these movements, these environmental movements started to come up, it more began with in the 60s. There were a few authors, notably Rachel Carson wrote a book, Silent Spring, which is sort of heralded as like the beginning of the contemporary deep ecology movement because it has connections to all sorts of theologies. It's got roots in...
Roots.
It's got roots in Native American, Buddhist, and Jain traditions. It's sort of, there's this ongoing theme throughout that sort of discusses like the Judeo-Christian idea of human beings as sort of stewards of nature,
right.
Which sort of which Ness said sort of gives us like this in-baked kind of superiority over nature, which he found kind of troubling. There are Protestant sects in the modern age that say that like that stewardship should be like caring for nature, but that's a whole other thing. Deep ecology has a few kind of central tenets. It's got eight central tenets that sort of break down into three basic propositions. It focuses on wilderness and biodiversity preservation, human population control, and simple living, or treading lightly on the planet.
Sure.
The ideas are that we, as humans, live as a part of nature. We're not separate from nature, but we are citizens of nature.
Right.
Adoy.
And that basically our sort of like anthropocentric, as in centering on humans, views of nature and sort of our like metaphysical ideals as people, doing a lot of damage to the environment. You've got capitalism with the overproduction and the abuse of natural resources. You've got all sorts of ideas about like the liberal concept of like the tragedy of the commons, wherein any communal land that is used freely without restriction will inevitably lead to its destruction because people are like selfish and will, which I don't necessarily agree with, but the idea is that people are selfish and will use more than nature can sustain.
Sure.
And those sort of things led to this idea that humans in deep ecology are sort of part of this like interconnected web. We are knots in the net of the biosphere, you know? So the idea is that we should, if we sort of expand our concept of what the self is, it kind of takes philosophical roots and view ourselves as, while like the we that we are stays the same. Mm. View ourselves as like a part of this, like these bigger, like natural communities, and like as a part of like the biosphere.
Yeah.
Then we will act in like a more sustainable and responsible way. Mm. And there are critics have come out for all sorts of reasons. Some people have said that deep ecologists hate humans. How can you say that humans are like a cancer on the earth? But the thing is that Ness never wanted deep ecology to be kind of anti-human, and he never wanted his very he subscribed to this idea of biospherical egalitarianism, which is just a fancy way of saying that everything that exists in nature is equal,
yeah,
and everything is sort of like a subject on under this like overarching moral order that we have, and everything should be given everything that exists interests should be taken care of, essentially.
Right.
And that everything in nature has the right to live kind of its own life as it as nature intends. And that's like all deep ecology is trying to say.
Yeah.
Deep ecology isn't trying to isn't necessarily prescribing to like we are inherently equal with every single living thing.
Sure.
I mean, that was Ness's personal philosophy. But it was basically just he wanted people more or less to kind of
Coexist with with nature rather than dominate over it and use it for gain.
Yeah, and despite your personal philosophies, kind of agree on the sort of overarching principles of like respecting nature. Because it's more than just respecting individual animals, it's respecting species as a whole, respecting entire ecosystems as an entity in themselves. Because one of the other criticisms of deep ecology is how do you advocate for the interests of something that isn't human?
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, even if something that's not human has interests, they can't like get up in the middle of in the middle of a room and say this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And the approach to that has been kind of split. Some people think that we should appoint people that essentially represent nature and that our decisions should be largely guided by them, but then some people say that that's like ecological oligarchy and that's ridiculous.
Right.
So some people say that it would be like constitutional intervention. But then that comes with its own whole other slew of issues about like impeding on the sovereign power of a nation to make laws. In its own respect. But essentially the basic tenet is that it's everything is connected and that we should treat nature with respect.
That's really interesting. And I think like, as you were saying, sort of the stuff that like could exist in a theoretical kind of overall deep ecological world, it rings to me as though I see a lot of, sort of the stuff that like, the tenets of cyberpunk almost, although like that in the way that is like people integrating themselves into this larger, because you mentioned the biosphere, right? And this idea of we are all feeding towards, you know, this thing happening. And then what a lot of kind of cyberpunk things do is like have that whole thing, but like have this idea of, you know, that biosphere being the web or being the sort of us all being tapped into this sort of world that is fully integrated together. And it's almost like, you know, the opposite of it, you might say, because it's like we could either fully integrate ourselves with this world or reject it entirely and build, you know, this our own integrated world. I don't know. I think that's
It's interesting. And I mean, it has similar roots in anarchism and stuff because this isn't necessarily just a deep ecological thing, but a lot of these sorts of like ecological movements, these are like more radical environmental movements. Also have ideas, come with ideas, like anarchist ideas of like local civilian populations kind of governing themselves and then having more like kind of, I guess, ad hoc or made in the moment kind of systems to deal with more broader issues that they can't deal with on their own, which historically has worked out. I mean, people have done that in times of revolution all the time, and those like ad hoc institutions become the codified institutions once the dust settles.
Yeah,
it was interesting that you brought up the cyberpunk
because
there is one for environmental sort of concerns,
Yeah.
solarpunk, which according to I didn't know the like definition of it, but I've heard of it before, especially in like science fiction writing.
Yeah.
And it's essentially a genre of fiction that focuses on craftsmanship, community, and technology powered by renewable energy, wrapped up in a coating of Art Nouveau blended with African and Asian aesthetics. Mm. It envisions a free, egalitarian. I'm just going to, yeah, thank you. World with a slight bend towards social anarchism.
Okay. Go.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it's sort of like, yeah, like this is a sort of sci-fi imagining of what could happen if we sort of put our focus towards like building a beautiful sort of craftsmanship.
Sort of an idea of what the world could look like if we went down like this more like ecological world.
Yeah.
What would human society look like?
It seems utopian to the same factor that cyberpunk is dystopian, being seemingly the antithesis of, going completely cyber.
I mean, I will say there are some people that would argue that something like deep ecology would be inherently dystopian, because a lot of these sort of like environmental movements, at the end of the day, deep ecology is faced with this criticism as well, don't really address the risk of kind of like authoritarianism or totalitarianism that would come with having this be like a central tenet of a nation state, for instance.
Right.
Because how do you enforce on everyone your ecological viewpoint? How do you make sure that everyone acts in accordance with your ecological values? Yeah. So there are criticisms that it would kind of devolve into like totalitarianism or authoritarianism.
Yeah, like especially on the large scale where it's like, we've had these massive scale changes of like, you can't have plastic bags anymore. Like even a little thing of like, we are making those small changes of just like people are changing the way they live, to be more ecologically minded.
Yeah. I mean, we're an incredibly robust species. We're designed to adapt to almost any situation that we need to adapt to. I think that at the end of the day, because that criticism's lobbed at any radical social movement.
Yeah, right.
So I think at the end of the day, it's people make it work.
We'll make it work.
People always make it work. You'd be surprised.
All right. That was great. That was awesome.
Mm.
Okay. What were our things? Let's have an overview, shall we? Mine was, I just thought you might have some music or something.
Do we get a bop?
I mean, it's so yesterday, but...
All right. My article was the list of... about 20%? 20%? The list of Oreo varieties, which we played a fun game with.
That's right.
Yes.
My article...
Fuck Disney.
...was basically fuck Disney. Yeah. But I suggested that there might be a conspiracy that Disney shut down UPA, the creator of the beloved children's animation, Madeline.
And Lachlan?
Deep ecology was my submission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A better way of life is what I brought to you,
Curtis. I agree. I must say, and it's no comment on you, my friend, I phased out a little bit.
That's fair.
Because I worked 9 hours today. I'm very tired. So I probably shouldn't have been the one to judge this particular episode.
No, I get it. You thought my thing was boring. It's fine.
Fuck, yeah, Jesus. Sure, shouldn't say anything.
You get it. You hate Lachlan.
I do not. I've never said this. My lawyer has recommended. Look, there's been a lot of talk in the media recently about me only choosing the funny ones. Me only voting for the funny ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to refute that today by voting for the Oreos.
Nice. Nice.
That's
He's
fair.
Been bought by the mouse.
I have bought, been by, bought the mouse. By the mouse.
How are we all?
That's fair. I mean, we didn't agree who was judging beforehand. You got to play to your audience.
That's true.
I get that.
That's very true.
Disney offered to pay a lot of money for the Good Time Boys, but then watched a show of ours and was like, niche Australiana and cum jokes, not for me.
It's fair. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Unfeatured Articles. If you weren't sure what we were listening to this whole time, it was Unfeatured Articles, you dummy. You were listening to Unfeatured Articles the whole time.
You big fuckhead.
Oh.
You guys didn't tell me this before I put the headphones on.
Yeah, because we tricked you. Because that's what we do. We get people in our studio and we trick them into recording an episode of Unfeatured Articles.
Grace, thanks again for joining us today.
Anytime.
Despite the fact we tricked you. Fucking James, you're so close to doing your Clint Eastwood impression. I hate it. We'll put up a photo of James' Clint Eastwood face. Lachlan. I don't know why.
What do you have to ask?
I've got nothing. Genuinely. How are you? You doing well?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Good.
I'm a little tired.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's very late.
Yeah. We had to record late tonight because, well, we went and supported our friend Sophie Jackson in Heather's.
Oh, my God.
We did.
It was so good, though.
It was really good.
It was really good.
It was really good. She did such a good job as Heather Duke. When's this episode coming out?
After the show finishes.
Oh, yeah.
They're only doing like three nights.
Yeah, fuck.
It's just two weekends.
But anyway, you can... Sorry, no, I insist.
Oh, thank you.
Please.
So if you want to find us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, we're Unfeature Articles on Facebook and Instagram, Unfeature Pod on Twitter.
You can listen to any of our previous episodes on any of the podcatchers of your choice. I mean, you're probably listening to one now.
It's true.
So Spotify, iTunes,
you've been
Google Play.
This whole time
you fucking
you've been listening to Unfeatured Articles.
Can we stop punishing our audience for listening to us?
How dare you.
Look, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, I've been Curtis Lang.
I'm also here.
Fuck, dude. No.
This is good. I'm James Keogh. And till next time, browse responsibly.
Oh, fuck. 'm just gonna let everyone know that the same chill music was playing.
Oh no!
During our outro, so that just went swimmingly.
Ignore it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50% to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.